Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, a trip down memory lane this episode, you might say, coming up this weekend in Canton, Ohio, the induction of Brett Favre into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And fitting, I guess, more than anything, that a year after Ron Wolf goes into the Hall of Fame in the new contributor category, the GM who traded for Brett Favre. Now Brett Favre goes in. The two kind of joined at the hip. They have that place in history together, don't they?
Yeah, they do, Mike. And really, it's kind of surreal that we're at this point, that Favre now is going in. It's been these little steps, you know, since the end of his career last year, going into the Packers Hall of Fame, taking his place, the only guy to have his number retired and also go and get that honor. And now going into the Pro Football Hall and making that step. It really is. It's something I think really fits well with the Packers, that the two guys that really single-handedly were responsible for reviving this franchise now going year after year into the Hall of Fame together. Brett's wife, Deanna, will be inducting him, presenting him for induction. Yep. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a really special weekend, and I know getting a little bit of a taste of it so far from Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy, this organization really excited about this opportunity.
Yeah, a couple of things about Favre. Now he goes in on the first ballot, is his first year of eligibility. The 24th Packer to go in, but the fifth one of the Packers to go in on the first ballot, joining Forrest Gregg, Bart Starr, Ray Nitschke, and Reggie White. He's also the 14th quarterback to go in on the first ballot, the first one in a decade. Troy Aikman and Warren Moon went in 10 years ago on the first ballot, and the Packers are now the third franchise to have two first ballot Hall of Fame quarterbacks, Packers with Starr and Favre, who actually are now the first and last on the list chronologically, but then the 49ers with Joe Montana and Steve Young, and the Cowboys with Roger Staubach and Troy Aikman. It's really a neat list to see that Brett Favre is on that list. We sort of knew that he would get there eventually, but now that it's for real, I'm sure even for him, as a, you know, Cowboys Roger Staubach fan growing up, it's got to be pretty neat for him to see his name on a list like that.
Well, when you and I had this discussion, as you just said, some really great information there. It really stands out to you about how difficult it is to capture one of those Hall of Fame, really game-changing, once-in-a-lifetime type quarterbacks. The Packers now have been fortunate. They have three. You know, when you look at what Aaron Rodgers has done and potentially where he'll be, you know, down the road. But, yeah, he did talk about that in his national conference call. You know, when he was a kid, it was just he wanted to be Roger Staubach. You know, he wanted to be a guy that could be just really carry a team and an organization. And I think he said that too in the Packers yearbook this year, that there was no option. There was no plan B.
Yeah.
It was either going to be a quarterback or basically just fall back on his backside. So for him to be able to not only get to that level, overcome the things that he got to, but to have the career that he did in the fashion that he did, it really does speak to him as a player and really the infusion of energy that he brought to Lambeau Field every weekend.
Yeah. Well, and certainly plenty to talk about with Favre, but let's touch briefly on another inductee this weekend in Canton. Kevin Green was outside linebackers coach here in Green Bay for 5 years, was part of the coaching staff of the Super Bowl team, Super Bowl 45. Now, he's not going in for his coaching. He's going in for his Hall of Fame playing career. And really, for a guy who is third all-time in sacks and the most sacks ever by a linebacker in NFL history, in my opinion, took a little bit too long for him to get in, frankly.
Yeah, and we heard about it for so many years by Dom Capers, the Packers defensive coordinator, who'll be presenting him. I remember there were so many years, my first couple years on the beat, where Dom just like, it's kind of, in a Dom Capers fashion, said it's kind of crazy that Green isn't already being recognized. Well, it finally happens this year, better late than never, however you want to look at it. And really, when you do look at his career, it was astonishing what he was able to do. I mean, his last year in the NFL, he still had 12 sacks. And it's something that he carried through during his time in Green Bay. In 2009, was brought in. The Packers had Clay Matthews. Capers and the coaching staff felt confident enough that he could be the one to groom him. Yeah. And as we've heard from a lot of guys, from Matthews all the way to Dayton Jones, he taught that secret of his bull rush to all those guys. It's something that he would not talk about when he was doing his conference call. He's like, that's strictly, you know, a kind of a fraternity thing. But you can see his imprint on the pass rush even today in Green Bay. And certainly with him picking Capers as his presenter shows you the respect that he has for him and what Capers did for his career as well.
Yeah, a long relationship with Dom Capers there in Pittsburgh, where Kevin Green was an impact player when he came over from the Rams, and then also was a big-time impact player at Carolina when Dom Capers took over as the head coach of an expansion team that then came here to Lambeau Field and went toe-to-toe with Brett Favre and the Packers for the NFC title.
Absolutely, and we're going to talk about this in some of our later segments with Favre, how you know his time with Mike McCarthy really helped his resurgence. Green said the same thing about when he got to Pittsburgh and Capers. That's really what made him a Hall of Famer. He had a decent career in L.A. and had some success with the Rams,
yeah.
But the thing was is he hadn't really reached that upper echelon of pass rushing. He was able to do that in that zone blitz defense and really now had a lot of success. Now, didn't get the Super Bowl ring as a player,
right.
But did come around and in 2010 was able to get it as a coach. And if you talk to Green now, that's one of his biggest accomplishments he feels, even though it wasn't associated with his playing career.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, we'll talk more about Brett Favre's playing career when we come back after the break. We'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, when you look at Brett Favre's career, of course, it starts with that famous Cincinnati Bengals game. In 1992, he comes off the bench relieving an injured Don Majkowski. I actually remember I was playing in a college golf tournament that day and came off the course mid-afternoon, was trying to get something to eat in the bar there in the clubhouse, and the game was on TV, and it was like, well, it's number four is quarterbacking, you know. Didn't know anything about Majkowski's injury until started watching
it. Yeah, there's no Twitter then to check on your phone.
Yeah, exactly. We didn't have those kind of updates. and boy, it didn't look good for a long time until those last two fourth-quarter drives and the pass to Kittrick Taylor, as we all know, and a legend was born.
Yeah, and I don't know it play for play like I know a lot of Packer fans do, but the thing that stands out to me when you really do look at it, because I've learned a lot about that game over the years and you hear so many people tell stories about it, it really did epitomize Favre in terms of it was a small sample of what he could do on a football field. There was going to be some really headache-type plays, but he always gave you a chance in the long run. And yeah, and really, as you said, a legend was born. 297 starts began right after that, the next game. And really, you could do a show for 8 hours going over every single accomplishment he had. But
yeah.
Starting from day one, as Mike Holmgren said numerous times after this, you knew that they had something special. Even if it was going to take some time to cultivate and harness, you knew Favre was going to be a difference maker.
Yeah, and it didn't take long. I mean, there were some heartaches there, some rough interception years, you know, in the early going. But then 1995, he wins the first of three straight MVPs. And really the game that put him on the map for the MVP, you might say, that first one in 95 was the game against the Bears in mid-November. He had a ridiculously bad swollen ankle. Nobody knew, really, until he ran out of the tunnel that day if he was going to play. I happened to actually be in the stands at Lambeau Field, one of the last games I went to as a fan before I was a full-time sports writer. And he comes out of the tunnel. The crowd is going absolutely crazy even before the kickoff, the fact that he was going to play. And then he throws five touchdown passes and beats the Bears and keeps the Packers in the playoff hunt and the whole bit. And just another piece to the legacy, but really, in my opinion, the first step towards those three straight MVPs.
Yeah, and the Iron Man mentality that he had, really playing through anything, regardless of his own condition, the conditions of the field, whatever it might be, you know, pushing through. There's something I always go back to. Favre always says he doesn't know if he was the best passer, you know, the most accurate or strongest arm, but he always said that he had the most fun. And I thought you brought up a great point there with how the crowd reacted to Favre. Obviously, not every game ended in a victory.
Right.
But I have to imagine there are few NFL fan bases that had as much fun watching a quarterback as Brett Favre. For those 60 minutes, you are going to be thoroughly entertained. Sometimes, a little bit more in terms of, you know, depending on how things shuffled out. But that's the thing that stands out to me is those moments. And my dad always told me that when I was younger. I mean, you don't understand. I don't think millennials, my generation, whatever, understand how much struggle there was in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you finally find that quarterback and what he did to revive that franchise and get them trending back towards a Super Bowl in really a pretty short time frame. I mean, that rebuild only lasted about 3 years once he got there.
Yeah.
And they were in contention again for a Super Bowl title.
Yeah, well, I mean, to go from where the Packers were to suddenly in the playoffs virtually every year. I mean, Favre's first playoff game, he throws that, you know, off the wrong foot, rolling left,
right,
you know, touchdown pass to Sterling Sharp to beat the Lions in Detroit for that first playoff victory. Then a couple of years later, you're suddenly in the NFC Championship 3 years in a row, the heartbreaking loss to the Cowboys, but then you win the Super Bowl in 96. You go back to the Super Bowl in 97. And the Packers were this powerhouse suddenly within just a few years. And Ron Wolf even has even said before, he calls, you know, many people call Yankee Stadium the house that Ruth built. When you look at Lambeau Field now, the whole big renovation in 2003 and all of the renovations since then, he calls this the house that Favre built, and it's hard to argue with that.
No, exactly. I mean, you look at some of these franchises right now, you talk about, you know, with Cleveland and the amount of quarterbacks they've gone through, and, you know, people, you know, Miami not being able to find a quarterback immediately after Moreno. It's amazing to me what the Packers went through. How many? Now, there's some great quarterbacks there. I think Lynn Dickey is one of the most underrated quarterbacks in NFL history, let alone the Packers. But the problem is that they never were able to get back to that playoff run consistently. And where they were at that point in time when Ron Wolf came in, when Bob Harlan moved into the role that he was, they needed to revitalize themselves. With the way the direction the league was going, with how things were trending, they needed something to excite the fan base. Favre did that and a lot more. And as you said, the things that happened, whether it was the Lambeau Field, you know, atrium, the now some of the stuff they're doing with the Titletown District.
Right.
All that started with that foundation of Wolf, Favre, Holmgren, and Harlan. And it really is something special. When you look at a community-based team, to have all those people come together, it's really a perfect storm. All those pieces had to fit.
Yeah. Yeah, Brett Favre winning three consecutive MVPs. Now, at the time, that was unprecedented.
Right.
You know, Peyton Manning since has won more MVPs, and Tom Brady's won multiple MVPs and whatnot. But at the time, three consecutive MVPs, it had never been done before. The third one was shared with Barry Sanders. Just a remarkable run at the top of his game, and he stayed at the top for a long time after that, and we'll talk a little bit more about the rest of his career after the break. We'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, as we move ahead to the latter stages of Brett Favre's career, if you were to pick one game that stands out the most, it has to be the Monday night in Oakland in 2003, the night after Favre's father and high school coach, Irv, passes away. And Brett Favre had the whole nation captivated by a 399-yard, four-touchdown performance in prime time. Just an absolutely remarkable game.
Yeah, and one of the things that often gets lost in that, in addition to not knowing 24 hours ahead of time whether or not Favre was going to be playing, is also how dominant that was. That was one of the most dominant victories of Favre's career, just how decisive the Packers were in that victory. I think it was, what, 41-7, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And how he, how not only how Favre played, but how everybody rallied around him, that had a feeling of what could be not only a special game, but a special season. And really, it came after a time in which there was some questions about where Favre was at in terms of his just overall career and the trajectory he was heading. They had some disappointment. They hadn't consistently been to the playoffs. But really, in that moment, it brought back all the things and all the feelings that I think everybody felt about Favre and how he really captivated that fan base. And yeah, I think everybody that night was a member of the Favre household.
Yeah.
It had that feeling, and knowing how close he was with his dad and the little bit of an imprint that he left in his time with Favre in Green Bay, it really was something to behold.
Yeah, you felt you felt like maybe that was going to be a special year for the Packers when that happened. Just unfortunate right. that the way things ended, the 4th and 26 in Philadelphia, and then the interception in overtime after the Packers had won that dramatic wild card game the week before on Al Harris's interception in overtime against the Seahawks. But then you fast forward a few more years. 2005 was a rough year for the franchise, a rough year for Brett Favre, a ton of interceptions. The team goes 4-12. Ted Thompson makes a coaching change and brings in Mike McCarthy in 2006. Now, Brett Favre had gotten to know Mike McCarthy in 1999, was his position coach under Ray Rhodes for 1 year. Then McCarthy comes back as the head coach in 2006 and really, I think, rejuvenated, revitalized Favre's career there for those last 2 years in Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, Favre had 29 interceptions in 2005. I remember at the end of last season, I do remember this pretty vividly. I was coming back from Wisconsin Dells, and there was the questions about if this was going to be it for him and if he was just going to move on. It had been a disappointing season. Is it time to try something else? And McCarthy comes in, and over those next two seasons, only had 33 interceptions combined. I mean, that 2007 season that he had was as fine, other than obviously his MVP years, but that was about as fine of a season as he had in his career.
Yeah, and might have won his fourth MVP that year, if not for the fact that Tom Brady threw 50 touchdown passes for the New England Patriots, and the Patriots had gone 16-0 in the regular season.
Yeah, and I know going through the Packers media guide and some of the stuff we were doing for the game day program this year, that means a lot to McCarthy. That stage of Favre's career, being able to have that type of success, not only him, but I mean being able to get that out of Favre again. And really, I know everything got kind of sour in 2008, but in some ways it was a fitting end to his run in Green Bay, being able to get them back to the NFC title game and really looking a lot like the Favre that I think everybody remembers.
Yeah, another playoff heartbreak. I mean, the Packers come so close to getting back to another Super Bowl. Obviously, it's regrettable that Favre and the Packers weren't able to go back one more time. But then everything happens in 2008, and Brett Favre moves on. The revitalization of the relationship, the resurrection of the relationship between the Packers and Favre took a few years, but then we saw that last year when Favre came back for his Packers Hall of Fame induction and 67,000 people bought tickets in the Lambeau Field Stadium Bowl to welcome him back. Just an incredible night, an incredible moment when he walked out of that tunnel that night.
It's the loudest I've ever heard Lambeau Field. You know, 28 years living in Green Bay, Wisconsin, I've never heard an ovation like that. And it was 70,000 people standing up cheering at the top of their lungs for minutes. There's going to be nothing ever like that again, I don't think. Yeah. Maybe Aaron Rodgers. We'll see down the road. But, I mean, in terms of just the raw motive, that's going to go down for me as one of the most special memories in that stadium.
Yeah, anybody who is there will remember it forever for sure. Well, we'll come back with a little bit more after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, we don't have enough time in this final segment to talk about all of the records that Brett Favre holds, but that consecutive games played streak that he holds, I think it goes down, it will go down in sports history as one of the unbreakable records. It's Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak. It's Cal Ripken's consecutive games played streak. It's Nolan Ryan's 7 no-hitters. It's the type of record that I don't think anybody's going to touch. And the fact that this guy did it as a quarterback, you know, he wasn't a kicker. He wasn't a wide receiver, wasn't a defensive back. A quarterback to play that many games in a row, I don't think anybody ever comes close to it.
Yeah, you can't draft a quarterback expecting him to start every game for you for 16 years. And that's really the remarkable thing about Favre is he battled through a lot, but he did it at an exceptional elite level. It's not like you ever put Brett Favre on the field and you're like, God, this guy, you know, we need him, but he's not Brett Favre. He was always Brett Favre, no matter what the situation called for, no matter how big the game was, no matter how he felt, where he showed up on the injury report. Brett Favre was always there on Sunday. And I think that's the lasting legacy. He walked away from the game with a lot of records. I know he was the first one. I think it was 500 touchdowns, 70,000 passing yards, 6,000 completions, 10,000 pass attempts. An amazing amount of production. But at the end of the day, those records, man. 297 consecutive regular season starts, 321 if you include the playoffs. 16 games a year. At most 20.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
Yeah. And as you mentioned before, had so much fun doing it. Yeah. We even saw towards the latter end of his tenure in Green Bay, started the, you know, the fireman's carry with his receivers after big right. touchdowns and things like that. Just really put a ton of joy into the game. Now, as far as the Packers and Hall of Famers go, in 5 years, I think we can assume Charles Woodson. I would imagine Woodson will go in on the first ballot.
I
guess you never know for sure, but
yeah.
But Charles Woodson, and actually he'll go in the same year as Peyton Manning, who has also retired. So in 5 years, that'll be quite
same
the
draft class.
That'll be quite the Hall of Fame class there. And then the next one for the Packers most likely would be Aaron Rodgers. Is Aaron Rodgers headed to the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
He is. It is interesting if that's going to be the next one, too. I think Leroy Butler deserves to be in there. We could do a show on that.
Yeah, we could do a show on that.
But whatever the case may be, you're right. The Packers have a very unique opportunity now with Starr, Favre, and likely Rodgers. And that'll be a special day whenever that comes. I know Packer fans are hoping that's a long, long way in the distance. But and you look at that Super Bowl team, Woodson, he deserves to be there, too, I think.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for watching, everybody, and we'll see you next time.